If you're haunted and harassed by your own inner critic, if you've ever been curious about why hypnosis works so well, if you're a seasoned hypnotist, or if you suspect that the inner critic is actually hypnotizing you to hold back from reaching the greatness that you know deep down is inside you, lean in and get inspired to get out of your comfort zone and create your one precious life with purpose and intention. If you like this show, you'll love my powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, because it gives you crystal clear guidance and direction and illuminates an ingenious way to make triumphant decisions, no matter how stuck you feel or how confused you were. This powerful hypnosis audio is my gift to you when you go to theimpostermonster.com. Again, that's theimpostermonster.com. Don't forget the. Theimpostermonster.com. And yes, I'm done saying it. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening. I'm Lori Hammond, and I'm truly grateful for you. Welcome to today's episode. I am so excited to introduce to you Gina Catherine. She is a sex, love, and relationship coach who helps women come back to their bodies using the body, mind, meditation, breath work, science, and a bit of magic to guide clients so they can fully thrive in life and love. Enjoy this conversation. I think it's been probably a good 6 weeks since we were in a clubhouse room together. Yeah. And I just remember you sharing about getting out of your comfort zone and doing things even though it was a little bit scary. And that's kind of just everything that this podcast is about. And since then, probably because you and I direct messaged on Instagram, Instagram has been putting your stuff in my newsfeed. So I've gotten to know a little bit more about you, who you are, what you do. And I'm super intrigued because I'm not even going to say, I'll have you just introduce yourself, tell us what you do, where your heart is, and anything you want us to know.
Yeah, thank you for that. So I am a certified sex, love, and relationship coach. And what that means is helping people go from, so Tara Brach, I don't know if you know Tara Brach, but she's wonderful. And she calls it in trance, right? And I call it just being stuck or asleep or numbed. And I spent a good part of my life wanting things, knowing what I wanted, knowing mostly what was holding me back, and not being able to have that get out of the blocks into the race type of feeling. And one of the things that held me back, I think, is because I relied very heavily on my intellect. And when I started coaching and I saw how many incredibly smart, brilliant, creative women were really in their heads. And so I coach women and that coming back into the body and using practices and not expecting immediate change, not expecting this fantastic moment where you just decide. I love mindset work. I find that it's incredibly powerful. What I do think is missing is incorporating and rolling the body mind, the mind body into this type of work. And so my mission in life, where my heart is, my sacral energy, all of my thinking, all of my feeling, all of my dancing, all of that is around getting to a place of living fully myself and then sharing some of the strategies with clients on what that looks like through breath work, through meditation, through mindfulness, through body work, through our sexuality. I have a heavy focus in my coaching practice on sexuality. And when people hear this, they very often think, oh, she's a sex coach. It's really not about like how to do the things. It's about how to remove the blocks that stop us from wanting to do the things. So it's this beautiful practice about bringing women home to their selves, to their original essence, outside of that conditioning, outside of not feeling worthy, all these things rolled into like, what is stopping us is here in our body. And we just have to go in and ask, what's going on? What's going on? So that's me in a pretty big nutshell. What's the biggest nut on the market? Like a coconut. That's me in a coconut shell.
I know. And I just totally threw you into the fire with that as well. And so I love how you articulated that. And I have to tell you, Gina, I feel like you and I, the universe has been sending me personally a message. And I often feel like I receive these messages not only on my own behalf, but on the behalf of the people who pay attention to me. And I feel like if this is going to help me, it's going to help someone else. And it's so interesting because this idea of sex and helping people step into their sexuality is something that I would never touch. And this is going to be like a really vulnerable moment for me to admit to the millions of people who will listen to this episode when it goes viral. That it's something that I struggle with. And so you, a woman named Freya Norden, a woman named Kaz Riley, who they're in the hypnotist world, but they specialize on those kinds of issues. I reached out to you before I realized this is where you specialize. And so seeing your stories in my newsfeed, I'm like, okay, I know that I'm supposed to put this message out there. I know I'm supposed to receive this message. So I just want to thank you once more personally for being here and talking about this. I know I'm going to benefit from this. And then I feel like I could have done a better job laying the foundation right at the start. So for anyone listening, Gina, you are not a hypnotist, correct?
Correct. I'm not a hypnotist. Okay.
So I felt like my heart felt like Gina was supposed to be on this show. And just, you know, hearing Tara Brach say that it's a form of trance. And so I think probably what you're doing is very closely aligned to what other hypnotists do. So I just want to lay that foundation for people listening. We might not be speaking hypnospeak, but I believe that this content will resonate really deeply with everyone who's listening. So will you talk to me inside your comfort level, what brought you to do this work? Maybe share a little bit about your journey or the transformation that you coach others through in this aspect.
Yeah, thank you for that question. So my journey was about this, a little bit of a reawakening, right? So from going, part of that came with being older. Part of that came with my children getting older. I have three children, two are adults and one is 15. And as our kids get older, I had put myself in a supporting role. So I was in a supporting role with their dad. I was in a supporting role in the family unit. And I had not put myself in the role of protagonist in my own story. Mm-hmm. And that I knew this, I felt a lot of resentment around this. I felt a lot of anger around this. I didn't really see clearly around this. I did a lot of things to distract me from this. And one of the things that was really and truly missing was I told myself a story that that good girls don't enjoy their full sexuality. Do you have any like word restrictions on this?
I do not.
Okay.
We'll just mark it explicit if we need to. And I want you to feel totally comfortable sharing what you want to share. Okay.
Thank you for that. So like in my mind, I was not fully embracing my sacral energy, right? Like my sexuality. And when you have a block, nothing flows, right? So everything was just feeling very out of sorts because I don't remember anyone ever telling me that good mothers don't want to have amazing wild sex. Good mothers don't enjoy kink. But it was something that that I had told myself, right? A good mother doesn't do these really wildly luscious, juicy things in bed. That's for before when you were married, before you had kids. And so as my kids grew up, I had this reawakening. I had this, and you can have it in a container of marriage. I did not. My marriage ended and I began this reawakening, and I reminded myself all of the time, my pleasure belongs to me. Nobody gives me orgasms. Nobody gives me pleasure. We share this time together. And that shift alone was so powerful. And I felt like it was the thing that unblocked all of this flow of energy. Like, I'm a really big chakra person, so I believe in this, but you don't have to believe in that for it to be true. And this free flowing energy, people started noticing. I'm 53 and not your typical like head turning, walking into a bakery type of, you know, so, but I noticed this, like I say in my coaching practice that my vibration level raised so much. I was really missing out on this sacred sensuality, this sexuality. And what I did is I started to give this to myself. I started to get super curious about my body, about my sexuality. I didn't let TV or stories or erotica or porn tell me what was my turn on. I just tried everything. And this permission and this exploration with me personally without a partner, and this me giving myself knowledge and practicing, gave rise to attracting these partners who were equally open, right? And so then my sex life, my sexuality grew and bloomed and blossomed and became this source of power and energy, surprisingly, in all other aspects of my life.
Wow. Okay, can I pause for just a minute? And this is so awesome. So first of all, this video, this conversation will go on YouTube for people to watch, and then it will also be released on all the podcast channels. But I just have to say that how vibrantly beautiful just as a human you are. And I, that is what I saw with the eyes of my heart when we were on Clubhouse, and I couldn't see your face. It comes across in your voice. It comes across in your presence. And so I just want to acknowledge that and tell you how cool that is. And it reminds me of a time when I was at a live music venue with a friend of mine. And we were there maybe 20 minutes early. It was a really small venue, and we were sitting there just kind of people watching. And these two men walked in and were standing in front of us with their back to us. And we both said, that guy is somebody. Like, I don't know who he is, but he just, there was nothing special, but it was like, you could feel his presence when he walked in the room. Yeah. And we later found out that he was a fairly well-known celebrity. Anyway. And what I think there's an Audrey Hepburn quote that talks about how when you really step into and inhabit your internal awesomeness, that people feel that. And so I love that you just expressed that. And I love, this is so good for me. I needed to hear this because I love that you're talking about how it has radiated through your entire life and how it has attracted the partner that is right for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. How, I'm just so curious so I am a 46-year-old mom of three adult daughters. And so this is just my curiosity. How do your kids respond to what you do? Are they supportive? Did it freak them out at first when you started talking about this, about just about stepping into sexual freedom, if I'm wording that correctly?
Yeah. So it wasn't that I was prude and then I suddenly became, you know, the wild woman in the bedroom. I was always open and sex positive. I spoke with my children about their own sexuality and their own journey outside of just don't get an STD and don't get pregnant. We had more conversations about this, about attachment and consent and And also spoke about these things, about being responsible, about keeping yourself safe, about, you know, from things that you don't want to happen, and your power around this, the chemicals that are released, you know, just as anybody new on the sexuality front would need to know. So I had conversations with them about this. In talking about it with everybody else, and you know, if you've seen my Instagram page, I talk a lot about like sexual vibrancy, and my Clubhouse talks with another female sexuality coach use the word kink, we use the word orgasm, we use the word, you know, we use BDSM, and we talk about all of these things. My girls are 22 and 21, and they are also very sex positive, and I think they like it in my role as a teacher. I'm not sure how they feel. They have not made a comment about when I talk directly about my man and I, right? So they don't say, well, I'm glad to know that it's not that quite that open. And I think that that's okay. And I take my cues from my children and not from me. It's not about my comfort level. I invite them to be comfortable by how comfortable I am, but I don't press them outside of what they want to talk about or what they want to hear about or know about.
This is so awesome. And I appreciate you answering that question. So I grew up in a really religiously oppressive environment where sex was bad, 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 bad. And it would send you to hell if you didn't do it in the correct context. And so I really, my goal in raising my girls was to not put that on them. And I think I did okay. But seeing women like you who set an example of just having this open positivity and open conversations about it, I think is really refreshing. And I think it's really valuable. Do you have any, what would you say to a parent? You know, I think of people who are close to me in my life who have like, like not quite adolescent children, and they know they're going to have that talk and they're just absolutely dreading it. What are some ways that, some strategies that would help them show up in a more comfortable, relaxed way? And you were saying how your comfort level dictates your kids. What are some things that parents could do to get more comfortable when they're talking to their kids about sex?
Yeah, the first thing is to not have one talk, to not have one birds and bees talk, to not have one introduction. You have to shut their internet down pretty hard for them to know nothing about sex and sexuality. If they have a screen or an electronic device in front of them, they know something. Yeah. And it's better to have your healthy input than only porn or only, and I would say that equally as dangerous is this idea, this fairy tale idea that the media puts forth on movies and on TV shows. But that's probably the segue into a lot of people talking about sex is, with, let's say you're watching a sitcom or something that, you know, there's some, maybe a little PG sexuality in there, PG-13. As you said, they're kind of on the cusp of adolescence. You could ask them, like, what do you think about this? Does that seem real to you? Do your friends, is that a realistic depiction of what high school life is like? Do middle schoolers do this? Do you guys invite each other to dances? You know, start to talk about this in a whole triangulated way of sex, love, and relationships. So anytime something like this comes up, you could just, instead of saying like, well, I think this is an inaccurate depiction of, you know, what's a, no woman's going to come in 45 seconds. This is only because the movie is half an hour long, you know, like just so you know, like instead of putting on all of the, you know, no diatribes is what I would advise, is questions. What do you think about that? Does that seem realistic? Is that interesting to you? If you've never had conversations around words like turn on or things, don't come out of the blocks with that. Because their comfort level, they'll shut down, right? Just like when we get overwhelmed by things, our nervous systems shut down, so will your tween. Mm-hmm. So just using books or movies or TV shows and getting curious about it. Mm-hmm. When they do the talk, I think it's in the fifth grade now in public school, they do like family life education. And I asked my son, such a funny story. I asked my son, what did you learn today? Like, I can't imagine that he would have learned anything that I didn't already tell him, right? But I said, what did you learn today? He said, I learned they don't like you to laugh. But it is like sex and money people have difficulty talking about. So just introducing it a little bit by getting curious is probably my best advice, by inviting their curiosity. And another thing, like if you ever walk in on your preteen or teen self-pleasuring, I would practice your reaction now, because that will probably happen, right? Because that's something they will be in a therapy room later, because they will have been shut down around like, oh my heaven, you know, just, hey, dinner's ready. Just wanted to let you know dinner's ready. As cool and as neutral as you can be around sort of catching them. I'm doing the air quotes for those who are only listening, walking in on them and, you know, in a private moment where they're self-pleasuring, any evidence of self-pleasuring, just be very neutral about that. That's their life, their body. Another way, and my third tip would probably be in asking them, if you have questions that you might not feel comfortable talking to me about, what feels like a safer alternative to you? I can recommend some really good books, or you can ask cool Aunt Danae or something like this, right? Like you can ask your cool auntie or your cool uncle or somebody else who you trust as well. Because it might not be you. And just know that if it's not you that they're talking about their sex and sexuality and questions about, that they know that it's okay to ask and it's okay to not ask you.
This is awesome. So for someone listening who maybe has really young children or maybe hasn't even started a family yet, how would you help them start to think about the idea of when, just how to frame sexuality for their children and how to get them comfortable? I don't even know how to word this question properly, but I think you're picking up what I'm putting down. So
I do.
Go ahead. Lori.
Do you mean like before a person is fully sexual, mm-hmm. how do you work that? Like they still have the sexual organs and do you mean like how to introduce the topic, or do you mean how to introduce the openness of the invitation?
I think it's more the openness, and this is maybe beyond the scope. I never expected the conversation to go this way, but I can tell that you are such a good model of this as a parent. And so I think what I'm wanting to know is, it's how do you introduce the openness and how do you create that kind of parent-child dynamic that helps a child not feel judged when you ask a question like, how does that make you feel? Or what do you think about that? Because I can see if it's a relationship where the child is used to being interrogated by the parent, that could actually set them on defense. So it's more like, how do you lay that foundation of open communication in a parent-child relationship?
Yeah, I think just inviting them to think about their body, that they are sovereign, right? This is a word that sovereign has gotten a lot of traction in the last half a year or year. It's a great word because it means that you are in charge of yourself just because you are. It doesn't mean you've taken, like empowerment means that you've sort of gotten your power back. What you're talking about, right, is how to not oppress our children, how to not condition them negatively mm-hmm. toward their sexuality. Mm-hmm. And part of that is just having them practice in non-sexual ways, right? Like this is my hair. This is my clothing choice. This is my body. never forcing them to hug somebody, not ever coming to their defense. If the innocuous but pushy uncle wants to hug your son or daughter and your son or daughter does not want to be hugged, helping them with their words around their own sovereignty, that even if it's not their private parts, even if it's their hair, their cheeks, that this is my body and I get to decide.
That is so beautiful. I love that so much. Thank you. So when I was in that clubhouse room with you, I remember you sharing, I wish I could remember the exact context, but I remember you essentially sharing that there was something you were ready to do. And I don't know if it was maybe in becoming a coach or in starting to coach other people to get these aha moments that you have had. And since this podcast is all about imposter syndrome and people who feel like a fraud and they're afraid to step into their greatness and they're not sure they're ready and they think they might be a total fraud, will you just talk to me about your experience with that and how you've moved beyond that?
Yeah. So I still feel like there's a little something in there, right? Because once you uncover these layers, once you think like, aha, my inner child was running my business. My inner child doesn't have any business running my business. And then you think, okay, now I see her. I see she wants to stay safe. I see she wants to be the peacekeeper. And going out and talking about sexuality and is not like what a child wants to do. A child wants to stay small. But once you sort of come to terms with one piece of yourself that's holding me back, it did not mean there were not other pieces that were holding me back. So I would say the greatest thing that I've done, and I still feel like I'm almost there. It's like I had big, heavy ropes and chains on me. Not worthy, not an expert, not who's going to listen to me. All I know is this: I'm divorced. Who's going to pay me to help them with sex, love, and relationships? I failed. I this, right? Telling, like swimming in these stories around how you're not qualified to give information. It was definitely much, much bigger. Now I feel like there's just somebody like a little bit holding the back of my sweater. So there's no, I'm not even yet fully stepped into my power, my voice, my mission. I'm excited about it. I know it's right. I know I'm worthy. I know I'm the expert. I know I have so much value. I know just from this conversation, Lori, like I know that this topic lights people up.
Yes.
I know they're genuinely curious about it. I know it lights me up, but I feel still slightly held back and I'm digging this out, which is why I'm super interested in your work as well. I would say the biggest thing that has helped me is shadow work and, you know, Caroline Elliott wrote this book called Existential Kink, and it's about, you don't really know what this shadow is, what this fear is until you go directly into it, right? So for example, let's say in your coaching business, you want to make 10K months and one of the practices in her books was you go in on that hard, you journal every day for 30 days. Or you could do affirmations or bodywork practices and you say, I absolutely refuse to make 10K months because I am afraid people will judge me. I am afraid that I will not. So what I didn't realize is for me, I thought, I'm not afraid of being judged. I always speak my mind. I'm really independent. As I wrote this day after day after day, two things happened. One is the fear shrank because I thought, that's not really a thing, right? You start to flick them away instead of, you know, what Jung says, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will rule your life and you will call it fate. One of my favorite quotes, as you probably, you know, probably your whole methodology with hypnosis is around this, right? Like around, getting to things people didn't even realize. You know, I still don't know what's this thing holding my sweater back, but doing this work and going in hard at the stuff that makes us uncomfortable, at the stuff that makes me, you know, so for my clients, when they say, I've never orgasmed. And physiologically, you're able to orgasm, but there are things holding you back from this, right? So I have them right. I absolutely refuse to orgasm because I feel like it will, I will be too vulnerable. I feel like I will be hurt. I feel like I'm not capable of losing control. I'm afraid I'll be in control. I'm afraid that I will attach and not be able to get out of a bad relationship. I'm afraid. And they write these things without thinking of it, just barfing them on, and do it over and over again for 30 days. So one of the things that I dug out through this process that I never saw is I didn't believe I could have a successful business and be a good mother and a good lover because I didn't have enough time. Right. So I thought, I don't have enough time for that because there are not enough hours out of the day, out of my day. And I will fail at one of these things. If I focus here, I will lose my children. I will lose my good mother status. I will lose time with my kids. My lover will get frustrated looking at it, it took the charge out of it, right? It took the charge out of it. And I asked myself a lot of questions around, is that really true? Do I have a solution for that? So this is something I'm still working on, but knowing it and using some of the tools that I employ to bring pleasure to these fears, to embody the idea. So then you flip it, right? You flip it to the, I do have enough time. I do have enough power. I do have enough vulnerability. So whatever the fear is, I tend to flip it. And then I do practices around making that real in all of my cells.
Are you replying in real time, like I am afraid that, and then underneath turning it into a positive affirmation? Or do you go through for 30 days and then go through and turn those fears around and saying, I do have?
Yeah, you're so smart to ask this question because this is actually a huge piece of it. So then you ask whoever your higher source, you know, if it's source, God, Allah, universe, nature,
unconscious yourself, mind for those hypnotists.
Goddess, unconscious mind, exactly. Whatever you feel like is the most powerful part of your life, you, your spirituality, then you say, you know, dear goddess, please remove these fears from me. I have a deep fear that, and then you write them all down. It's called deep fear inventory in the book. And then at the end of the deep fear inventory, you write, I ask that you remove these fears. And then you can't do it on a computer. You have to physically tear it up. And a lot of people like to burn. A lot of people like to burn the list, but I'm fine just throwing it in the trash. I tear it. And I throw it in the trash because you don't need to remember them.
Right.
You don't need to remember what's holding you back. You don't need to remember. Nobody ever counts the days that they've been released from prison. Right. They only say, like, I was in jail for 565 days. I've been out of jail a while, you know. And so you just tear them up. You ask yourself, either your highest power or a higher power, to remove them.
Oh my goodness, this is so, so incredible. It reminded me of one of my favorite quotes from Yoda. He says, your fear must be before banish it, you can. And I do think there's just tremendous power in, you know, I think so often we resist those things and it's almost like it kinks the hose. It keeps them stuck in our body. And when we just start to talk about, just to start to say it out loud, it's like all of a sudden it loses its power. And I wanted to come back to another point you made where you said you feel like there's still something there holding you by the sweater. And as I was asking that initial question and saying, you know, how have you moved beyond that? At the same time, I knew you probably had something still holding the sweater, because I have learned since I started this podcast, and I called it Silence the Imposter Monster. I don't think that ever really happens. I don't think we ever silence the imposter monster. I don't think we totally move beyond it, but I think we start to condition ourselves. And it sounds like this is maybe what you've done, so that when we hear that voice telling us, you're a fraud, you can't do this, you know, saying those things to us, we can recognize it. For me, I'll say, I can look at it and say, okay, thank you, I hear you, and then just do it anyway.
Yeah, and that's the biggest difference. When I started to see a transformation in my life, it was when I stopped expecting myself to cut parts of myself off. Like, mm-hmm. okay, I don't like the part of me that feels like an imposter, so I banished it.
Yes.
And that never worked. And it was only with, exactly as you say, Lori, as turning to it and say, like, okay, I see that you feel like an imposter. That used to hold us back. I'm so glad it doesn't hold us back anymore, hold me back anymore. And befriending it, say, it makes sense. You know, it makes sense that you feel like this. This is intimidating. Validation of myself was what really moved my self-love journey into the next level, into the highest level it could be, is just validating that, yeah, it makes sense that you're afraid to be a burden to people. It makes sense that you're afraid to ask for things. And not really pushing myself around anymore was a huge journey for me. It took years and years and years. And so, you know, befriending that part. And exactly, I love, like, you physically turned and said, like, hey there, see you there, I see you. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's so powerful. It's so powerful, so simple, and so powerful. Yeah,
you know, one of the things that, are you familiar with NLP?
Yeah, yes.
That doesn't surprise me. So, you know, we hear these voices coming from certain places, and I didn't even realize it, but whenever I talk about the imposter monster, he's right here, like almost sitting on this shoulder. So when I talk back to him, it's, you know, okay, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
So you have mentioned a couple times the phrase body work. And the longer I do this work, the more I feel that the body really is the unconscious mind. And when we make shifts and adjustments to the physical body, it changes everything. So will you dive in a little bit and just talk about, maybe define body work and talk a little bit about how that is transformational for you and your clients?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And for this coaching methodology, it's different for every person. So there are some clients I have who just like a simple breast massage to connect to your heart and to open your heart. And it's just inviting the body in. And actually using your body to connect with the part of you that is blocked. It's almost using the body as a translator between these parts of your brain, right? Like maybe the primal brain that's like, no, we have to stay safe. And then the cortical, this is what we want, but don't do it, right? Like this argument isn't, like, to mediate that is to use the body. And so not just to use the body to bring connection, but to find the answers too. So when I coach clients, I will ask them to visualize exactly what they want, right? So a lot of times for my clients are looking for this particular partnership, or looking to come out from under heartbreak, looking to really feel this very strong, but I don't do the kind of love and dating coaching that is like, how to snag a man in 7 steps or something. It's really like about how to fully love and accept yourself so that you can invite that kind of love that is fully loving and accepting of you. So the other piece of the mind body or body work is about, you know, doing a scan and asking yourself, like, so for example, a lot of people, I say, I'll ask a question. What are you resistant of? And they say, I don't know. I guess I just, you know, and then I say, okay, wait, let's visualize it exactly as you want it. How does that smell? How does that look? How does that taste? How does that tactile feeling of having this lover that you have always dreamed of and wanted, right? And then we do this body scan. And they'll scan their body and they'll say, I feel it here, like maybe in your throat, or they say here, or their heart, or their sacral or solar plexus, right? And then, so they'll say, I feel it here. And then I'll say, okay, let's just bring some awareness to that piece of your body. Bring all your breath and your awareness into your throat. And what is your throat telling you? Mm. And then the throat will say, they never even knew, right? The throat will say, I'm worried that I will choose another narcissist, or I'm worried that I will lose my autonomy, or I'm worried that I will give up my dreams for true love, whatever it is. It's very often found in the body. And so then what I will do is I will invite the client, the co-coachee, to find the part in their body. Where does the part in your body live that knows you can absolutely have this? Where is the powerful diva goddess? Where is she? And then they'll say like my thighs or like all, you know, they're in the top of my head, right? This all knowing. And I'll just have them bring that wherever that piece was from the body. Just do like you said, Lori, turn to it and say, hey, I see this in you. I see your fear. I see your warning. I hear your warning. And just surround it in a lot of loving kindness. And then what I have them do is like maybe do dance or yoga. This is how I was saying that it's different for every client. Sometimes it's, you know, sideways and mindfulness. And sometimes it's, like I said, a simple massage. Sometimes it's getting a massage, right? Receiving a massage. Sometimes it's just coating yourself in nice body oil, doing yoga. It's different for everyone, but inviting your body in is just such a beautiful way of having this complete, everything, all systems firing. And why not? Like you have all these team members. Why would you put yourself on the bench? And so knowing, inviting this, the body mind, to be involved in your healing or in simply getting what you want can also give your analytical brain, your cortical control, can give that a little rest.
Yes.
And then can refuel this, right? It's a very good way to tag team your own team. So that's what I mean by that. I hope that's a good description. And it looks different for every client, for every co-coachee.
It is an incredible description. And I think a lot of people who are listening to this will resonate because so much of what you're describing is similar to what we'll call like parts therapy, where you're talking to different parts of you, different aspects of your personality. And the fact that you're bringing the body in, I bet you get powerful results with clients, don't you?
Yeah, there's a lot of realizations, a lot of discovery. And the best part about that is that they know then how to do this themselves.
Yes. Okay, you had talked about self-love and self-validation and how it's taken you years to get there. I already know the answer to this, but will you tell me how much of that has come into play in your transformation? How much does self-love and self-validation have to do with where you are today? And if you could give someone listening a key to start them on their own journey towards self-love and self-validation, what would that be?
So all of it, all of my healing, all of my transformation, all of my high vibration comes from loving myself. And in the first 30 or 40 years of my life, I misunderstood that loving myself means getting super perfect, running marathons, really externally, getting a lot of external validation so that I could finally love myself, right? So it was about being lovable so that I could love myself. I misunderstood that. And so the journey part of it has been around slowing way down. I often say in my blogs and in my coaching and in my social media and website that it's it was about me dating myself for a year. And it wasn't, I didn't mean that I didn't go out to coffee or dinner or didn't have sex for a year. It meant that I put myself first in the way that I wanted other people to. So what I was looking for externally, I spent a year giving myself. So I want people, so for example, a simple example is, I love it. I connect very musically, like if music should be another love language. And so I thought, people really know me when they send me music that really resonates, that they know it's the cello or it's this type of hip hop or it's this. And so I began to send myself music from my email to my text, or I would text from one, you know, so I began to send myself music and I began to sort of make love to myself and ask. And part of that was just asking myself, what do you want to do today? What are you in the mood for? Do you feel like dressing like a hippie, or do you feel like dressing like a power entrepreneur? I didn't put a lot of expectations on myself because I didn't want those put on me from a beloved or a lover. And so just slowing way down, connecting with myself in my body and asking myself a lot of questions and allowing myself the time to get curious and the time to listen was really the first initial step, just like you would any relationship, any new relationship, right? You give them all of this attention. And instead of going to get this externally, I used to not cook for myself and would just like eat whatever leftover or stand and have bread. I stopped doing that. Like, would I want a lover to like hand me a piece of stale bread with peanut butter on it? Not really. It's okay to eat that sometimes, right? But I began to give myself the respect, the attention, and the interest. And I would tell myself the things I wanted to hear. And I would do it in the mirror. So I'd be like, Gina, you're so fucking brilliant. How did you come up with that? Right? Like I would say to myself, and I use humor a lot, and I would just crack myself up. And what was really, really neat about this, Lori, is that then it's almost magic, right? It's the secret sauce is that then the people who came into my life, I'm attracted to men and the male. So the males who came into my life rose up to that same level of vibration. So I gave myself a sense of worthiness. I gave myself this love and attention, and I still live in the same place. I still live where I live, but the quality of men, the caliber of men who then came into my life were right about that level, just right about that same vibrational level. Wow. And it really works. Yeah, it really works. And so that's like where the self-love journey. So yes, it made all the difference. And I would say for anybody listening who struggles with that is to just slow down and then the second step maybe can, do I have time to add another?
Absolutely. Step?
The second step I would say is the self-critic, right? To not push her around or him around, but to just notice when you're criticizing and interrupt the criticism. You cannot really live fully in your turn on, fully in your pleasure in life, in your business, if you're constantly criticizing. And so just interrupting this criticism and then asking, what is this criticism trying to get me? And then flipping it to a desire and then telling yourself you could have it is a very powerful three-step process. So that's another thing too, is that you can't really pause and listen to yourself if what you're listening to is constant criticism.
Right. So what I'm wondering, because I help women, well, humans,
yeah,
manage their weight is one of the aspects of the coaching that I do. And I found the exact same thing. It's all about self-love. And when a person really steps into that self-love, it transforms their relationship with food, their relationship with their body, and it radiates into every aspect of their life. And I notice that people encounter so much resistance to this idea of self-love and self-kindness and releasing that inner critic or acknowledging that inner critic. Could you talk to me a little bit about either how in your own life or how you direct clients to just get into the headspace of being willing to be kind to yourself, and maybe what sparked that journey for you and what opened you up to a willingness to actually do it?
Yeah, I think we're culturally programmed to self-criticize because we feel like when we criticize ourselves, that is a motivation for improvement, right? So I'll criticize myself. And there's an entire industry that makes money off of us hating ourselves. So we're bombarded from every direction to be anti-self-love. And it's hard to get out from under that. And empowerment comes from telling yourself, okay, well, everybody wants me to think that these wrinkles are ugly, or that this little bit of winter or pandemic cushion is is the worst, right? And I think that for your clients who are interested in weight and in this kind of self-improvement, I can see how this would be a very difficult time for them, right? Because they have all of these ways that it might feel good to eat something or to not work out, and they have everything about the pandemic is encouraging them to not live their dreams, is giving them excuses to not live their dreams, right? So I can see how that would be a very difficult piece for weight loss issues, or maybe not weight loss, but for being comfortable around your weight. And as you said, like we often put the cart before the horse, right? We're gonna love ourselves after we are 30 pounds thinner.
Right.
But that never happens. And what often happens is then we beat ourselves up for not doing the things that will get us to be 30 pounds thinner, and then we get more. So I don't think I'm answering your question very well.
What gave you a willingness to step into a self-love journey? Or how do you help other people that you work with get beyond that resistance to, I've noticed that there's just a resistance to being nice to ourselves. We're so programmed to be mean to ourselves.
Yeah. I think it's just about the realization of how good it feels. So if we're in a session and you had done something, let's say when you were 20, and you had made a very poor decision and you spent your life like hating yourself for this decision. And then in the session, perhaps we address this, right? Is there any way, does it feel comfortable that you can turn as your most powerful self and just offer a hug or a loving kindness to this 20-year-old self? You don't have to give that 20-year-old self any excuses, any answers, just offer that love. And invariably, you know, it's such a tender moment. And this feeling of, yeah, that's it. That's what I needed. It starts a little bit there. It starts with this feeling of, I just wish I would have had this loving acceptance from ex-husband, parent, sister, brother, boss, whatever, society, pastor in my church. I wish I would have had this. And then giving that to yourself and just how good it feels, just the invitation and the permission to give it. And then it's a little dopamine-ish, right? You get this little serotonin because you think, oh, that feels so good. It feels so close to home. It feels so wonderful. And knowing that the more you practice that, the more you can get from this little feeling. Like, this is what I tell my clients around their sexuality. Your turn on may feel just like a little bit of, like a little fluff, like a little bit of something. And then as you focus on it, as you grow it, as you turn to it, as you talk to it, it grows. And then it's like fire, like it feels so good. And it's the same with your self-love journey, is knowing how good it feels, knowing how right it feels, and then reminding yourself when this pattern comes up of that everyone wants you to hate yourself. And then you can maybe, it depends on who you are. You could, like, I make a joke out of it, right? Like, haha, I'm not going to be fooled again. Like, or, you know, I'm playful in getting rid of the conditioning, not getting rid of the part of me that was conditioned. So I push away the conditioning with humor, like, and then I loving, I don't mock or disparage or make fun of the part of me that was conditioned. I only mock and be silly about the conditioning. So yeah, these steps on the journey just feel so good that you naturally go for it again. And that knowing that the steps are there, like that, it's really the practices. And maybe you do some mirror work and you look in the mirror and give yourself an outrageous compliment. And you don't feel anything on the first day or the second day, but you're going to make a habit out of it. And then it starts to become playful. And then one day you cry and you think, at last, like, at last, I get it.
Yeah. I just have like 900 directions I could go from here, but from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you so much. I feel so emotional listening to you. I know I was meant to reach out, if nothing else, for my own personal self to hear this. And so much of what you're teaching is what I teach others, but I've never put it into this context. So this has been so beautiful for me. So for myself and for anyone who else is listening, that this is resonating with them, what is the next step as far as if somebody wanted to work with you?
If you want to get coaching, there are so many coaches out of there. I'm certified with VIDA. With the VIDA Institute, which is formerly known as the Tantric Institute, the Integrated Sexuality, and we do so much work with inner child, with really tapping in to the mind body and doing body mind work, and if somebody wants to directly work with me, I don't know if you put this in your show notes,
but I will.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can DM me on Instagram or on Facebook, or Gina Catherine Coaching is my website. So it's really like a powerful exploration of yourself. And it's, I think therapy, talk therapy and CBT, all these things are incredibly valuable and so powerful. But the coaching style and the exploration between coach and coachee can also be fun. There are very often tears, but it's very often fun. Like, hey, I didn't even know that. It's like going on an outing for these sessions. And it's probably like you see with people who are trying to maintain a healthy body weight. When you make something fun, when you make something light you up, and it's not just like, oh, like, I can't even believe I'm still not over this yet or something. And you give them tools to move into pleasure, to move into joy. They keep going, right? You keep at it and you keep going.
And for anyone who's listening that might not be able to easily access the show notes, Gina Catherine is with a C when you look up GinaCatherine.com, which I highly recommend you doing. I'm just so grateful that I got out of my comfort zone and messaged you and said, hey, do you want to have this conversation with me? And I'm so grateful that you were game for that. Gina, in closing, is there anything that I haven't asked that I should have, or any final words that you have to talk to a person who's maybe in the place where you were before this transformation, in helping them get to the after or to the through?
Yeah. And this is something that I learned from you actually recently, talking to a lot of you had a whole bunch of people on Zoom, and it was talking about how to overcome, talking about your resiliency and how to overcome things and what that looks like, and about the shaking, or, you know, like the using your body. You had talked about this and a couple of times in there, you got emotional. And my advice to people, and something that I thought when I was watching this of yours was, first of all, how beautiful that was, how powerful it was, how it made you more of an expert, right? You not only already knew these things and had brought yourself through so much, but you were in the middle of it, in the middle of it, and you were not afraid to feel your feelings. You were not afraid to do these things that I needed to hear from you, that all of those people on the Zoom call needed to hear from you. So I suppose the final thing to say is just a little bit of admiration for you and knowing your strength in the middle of something and reminding yourself it's okay to feel my feelings, it's okay to feel this, is an incredibly powerful thing to have watched, and a good reminder for me too that not just to hide and to get over it and then come out, but to be out during it and to not just to feel like I'm emotional about this. I can promise you that not one single person blipped off and said, oh, she's emotional. It's really like it drew us in. The power of your being a leader and a teacher and a strength for yourself and for me in the middle of it was a lesson I really, really, really needed to hear. So I actually got it from you, this mutual love fest.
Well, thank you so much. My community is who helped me so much with that, because I do group calls every week, and now and then I'll get emotional and I would apologize, and I might have apologized a bit on that call as well, but they came to me afterwards and they said, stop apologizing. You're giving us permission to step into our own authenticity, and it's beautiful. And so even though it's really uncomfortable for me, I allow it to happen. And so I'm so grateful to you for saying this, because it helps validate me and feel okay with my with my emotions. So
yeah, you're welcome. It was really beautiful. I really enjoyed that one.
Thank you.
I wanted to go back and see all the other ones. And I subscribed to your newsletter too.
Oh, awesome. I'm so happy. This is one of the coolest things about Clubhouse for me. I'll just put this little blip out there, because this is this brand new thing on people's radar. I think there's something special about Clubhouse and the connections and the rapport that it builds that's unique from all the other platforms. What have you thought about it? And I'll let you go soon. I feel like I just am keeping you. I love this
conversation. Oh, that's okay. I'm happy to talk about Clubhouse, because I feel like this is where my mission and my joy and my love I've gotten a lot of clarity around it. I've gotten a lot of good validation. I've gotten a lot of feedback. And I heard somewhere in a breathwork course, where people tend to receive and give information on three different levels: audio, visual, audio, and kinesthetic. And for me, I think the audio platform, people who are on there and who are really helping, there's no way to directly make money off of Clubhouse, but I feel like everyone's sort of in the rooms that I'm drawn to and in the places that I go to, there's a lot of curiosity and a lot of encouragement. And the audio piece of it, for me, I can really hear when somebody's voice does a little tremor and am able to ask. So when I'm moderating a room, I can hear this and I'll say, can we go back to the part where you said, and I'll ask a little bit more about that. And when I hear it, it's so powerful. When I hear different people talking, I also think it's a little bit of the great equalizer, right? Like, I'm such a fan of Corey Mascara, who's a mindfulness teacher. And I've been in a room on the stage with him, and people talk to Tony Robbins. Barack Obama was on there, right? If you raise your hand and you get on the stage, you have access to people and information that you may not have on any other platform. And there also tends to be zero tolerance for trolls. You just move them off, right? And I think that it's a great lesson in boundaries as well. I get to leave a room whenever I want to, whenever it offends me, whenever I think, oh, no. Or I get to stay in and see how uncomfortable I can feel. I get to decide at any moment. And so Clubhouse is really great for boundaries. It's really great for finding your voice, and for meeting people who are like-minded, for using your powers to call in people, and for following up, right? We all have that little Instagram connection or a Twitter connection that we can message each other. And it feels like a very powerful portal for information and for inspiration is a better word. So I both inspire and am inspired there. So I think that's the power of this audio-based platform, this Clubhouse. So I do love it.
I'm so happy you shared that. And I picked up earlier when you were talking about music, and I'm the same way when you send yourself gifts of music, and music makes you feel emotional. And I thought, she's an auditory processor like me. So there is something really special there. Yeah, I'm happy you shared that.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. Well, Gina, this has been absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to the listener for eavesdropping on this conversation that we're having for you and for me. Have an amazing day, everyone. Thank you so much, Gina.
Yeah, thank you too. Really loved being in your presence so much.
Thank you.
I'm so grateful you've listened all the way to the end. What is one tiny action step you'll take now, based on an aha moment you got during the podcast? Maybe that life-changing action step is to come accept the gift I have for you at theimpostermonster.com. Head there right now to get your powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, that lets you make important decisions and get crystal clear about your next step forward on this path of purpose in your one great and precious life.